Sarah Williams, Rio 27. Yes, you were saying your, you know, connections with Save the Children and how the good work they did medically.
Yes, I've worked with Save the Children. I have worked with Save the Children. Not for them, but with them in Korea, in Jordan, in different parts of Africa. And I've always found them a very sound bunch of people, willing to help, to participate, but doing their own thing and making a good job of their own thing, which to a very large extent has been setting up places of all descriptions to help small children, and to see that they have got local staff trained that can deal with whatever they set up. And they've done a very good job. In some cases, under very difficult circumstances. I did quite a bit with them in Korea, because I seem to remember I took one or two of their orphans ultimately, and we worked together on relief goods and things, and on getting things through customs and all that kind of thing. And they were a good bunch, and they were good lot in Jordan too.
How about the Red Cross? Do you have much experience?
I haven't had a great deal of experience with the Red Cross. I did. I think I can genuinely say I've had very little experience with the Red Cross anywhere. I know they've been there. I know they've been doing their stuff, but I have not personally had a great deal to do with them.
How about Oxfam?
Oxfam. When Oxfam started, it was a brilliant conception, a really brilliant conception. It had a top-class bird at the top called Leslie Kirkley, who was a very, very good man. And he built up a huge organisation, which then became utterly administratively top-heavy. And there was a period in Oxfam when, as you said just now, there was no follow-up to what was done in the various countries. This shouldn't be a blanket statement, because obviously it varied from country to country. But they had a very bad patch. When the money was coming in and was not always used as it might have been. Now, I'm not sure that this ought to go down, but I mean, this is something that I felt very strongly, because I've played with Oxfam in a lot of different countries. But they have, to a very large extent, I think they've got over that now. And they are now much more aligned with the work that they're doing in various countries. Also, they're now doing a tremendous that they, whereas before they were to a great extent doing permanent work, they've almost switched to emergency now, and are doing a tremendous lot of emergency work now. And they're doing it very well, but they did have a very bad patch. And I remember talking to an audience in Oxford. It was a big mixed audience or something or other. And we had Leslie and Della, who you've probably come across. She and I, and there was somebody else on the platform. We were all doing our sort of side of women's work. I think I did international. She did the local stuff. And the parliamentary stuff locally. And at the end, somebody in the audience asked me which of the three, which organisations would you say are doing a good job internationally overseas? So I immediately went to SADC, Save the Children, and YWCA. And the audience said, but what about Oxfam? And I said, you asked me for the ones I recommend, and those are the three that I recommend. Oxford has never asked me back again. But it was during their very bad period, and they were not an organisation as I could recommend at that time. I think probably now, I probably would. But then, no. It was a funny meeting. They were very cross. But as I've said before, you cannot write off goodwill, whatever damage it does. If there's goodwill, some of it somewhere is bound to rub off. And I've seen in different countries, I've seen the ghastly messes that some organisations that we have made in the Y and in the associated country in the world. But you can't write it all off because even if you just meet an African or an Indian or a Malay or Korean or Papua New Guinea or whatever, and you can make rapport with them, whether you're going to be able to do them any good physically or financially or mentally or anything, but if you can make a friendship rapport with them, you've done something. And it doesn't have to have tangible results, but it's just there. And to be able, I think one of the big things that I've got out of it is that I can go back to almost any of the countries that I've worked in and pick up with some of the people that I've met there, and we pick up where we left off. And that's, to me, is a form of civilization.
Have you noticed since the end of the Cold War, you know, this was the end of the breakup of the Soviet Union, of course, in the 1990s, although perhaps, you know, your involvement has not been direct, so direct in the 1990s as the earlier period, that there's sort of been changes in the nature of humanitarian intervention, if you like, in post-conflict or conflict situations.
I think it's got worse.
Yes, I was thinking of, you know, Yugoslavia, for instance.
I think that, that's an awful generalisation. But I don't think it's got any better. At a very odd level, you've got Chechnya. Well, you've got Afghanistan, which is appalling, absolutely appalling. But you've got Northern Ireland, which is still a mess, whatever anybody tried to do with it. And I don't think intervention has got much better. And I'm almost, this is an utterly heretic thought, but I'm almost at the thought that if there is internal trouble, let them sort it out. It probably would mean genocide, civil war, murder, rape, you name it. But it's their doing, not ours. And it doesn't build up that awful resentment against our interference. I mean, to put it on an absolutely basic personal level, I loathe Clinton because he tried to interfere in Northern Ireland. I mean, just putting it on a very personal level. And I think, you see, in the end, it was the UN that sorted it out, but in the end, South Africa and South West Africa parted peacefully. There was a lot of local determination on both sides, I think, to make it work. And it did. I don't think that determination has been so obvious in a lot of other countries. I mean, North Korea, South Korea are still at daggers drawn. China and Formosa, both of those, you see, they interfered with, and they're both trouble. They're both still in trouble. I'm not a politician, and I haven't really got a good global vision. But you see, we haven't heard anything about Somalia for a long time. As far as I know, there isn't a great deal of interference in Somalia at the moment, but they're sorting themselves out themselves. I hope that the same thing's happening in Ethiopia, that they're sorting themselves out. Now that we've stopped giving violent support to Eritrea, I think they will sort themselves out. And once we stopped supporting East Central in Nigeria, but once the outside world stopped supporting it, East Central has come back into being part of Nigeria and has become part of administrative Nigeria again. Putting our oar in doesn't always work. It might save a lot of lives. It might save a lot of poverty and misery, but almost always, it seems to me, it leaves resentment somewhere. And unless it is a genuine request from both sides, and then you might be able to do something. But you see, theoretically, I suppose the United States was asked to do it in Ireland, and look at the mess they made there.
So how about using force? You're actually going into a country
using
force against a country like Kosovo, for instance, for humanitarian reasons.
Quite honestly, I don't think we should. I think our very presence in 75% of the time in countries aggravates what's going on. And it may sound awful, and we get most dreadful pictures on television of this, that and the other. But I don't think we ought to. I mean, when it's something like Mozambique, where you get those ghastly floods, well, that's an entirely different matter. You move in there on absolutely purely humanitarian grounds. But when it comes to interfering in conflict, you see, Mozambique sorted it out. They were at war for God knows how long, but they ultimately they got it sorted out there. But if we start poking our nose in the conflict, I think, I really do, I think we 9 times out of 10 we aggravate. We may have a certain amount of success in preventing bloodshed and in keeping something going. But then, again, as I said before, if you're not prepared to keep things going, you shouldn't go in the first place. Because all you do is create a false sense of hope, security.
I expect, you know, given your vast experience, well, internally in Britain as well as overseas, you must have written many a report about, you know, your findings and advising suggestions. What has happened to those?
Well,
has,
any, file, no.
Has any good come out of them,
not
you know?
Yet.
From?
I'm still hoping one day. I can do a report on my computer like that, so I'm
But are the agencies, you know, that you send these to, do they use them?
Oh, yes.
They are used for advising
subsequent
work.
I did a report on Sudan when I first went out to Sudan. And that was used, that was almost universally used when I first went out. Because I don't think anybody had done one on the situation as it was there then. The Worldwide, of course, has used an awful lot of it. Even in sort of things like the Nursing Mirror, I have taken interest in stuff that I've found in other countries and sent to them. The car manufacturers I've sent to them once or twice when I've found something specific related to a particular car, a particular make of car or Jeep or Land Rover or whatever. I think people do take notice. And if I've explained to half a dozen people who've understood in this country the attitude over there, and if I've explained and made them understand over there something about how it's come about, I don't think we can do more than that. The ordinary individual, and I'm saying here that I consider that on the whole I am an ordinary individual, and we can do as much good in our little way in different countries, and sometimes much more good than people at top level. I mean, we should never have started an enormous peanuts industry in a country where it wouldn't grow. We wouldn't have started an enormous cotton industry in a country where it wouldn't grow. Not if you were a voluntary organisation. You would have tried to do something with what was already indigenous there and improve on what was being done. I mean, to take a very, very basic example of that, we were able to take out to Korea a couple of saddleback pigs, and we crossed them with the local pigs. I mean, the goats were a disaster trying to cross goats, but the pigs were a success. And I would say that the whole of South Korea today has got peaks descending from our peaks.
This takes us right the way back to the beginning, doesn't it?
Yes.
With your work in the war with the pigs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what are your plans for retirement then, Viola?
Retired.
You have retired. Well, convince me. You still seem very busy.
Well, I've been asked to go to a meeting in Geneva in June, an international meeting to say something or other, so I'm buzzing off there. Otherwise, I'm concentrating on the locality.
That must be very restricting for you, I think. But I imagine you still go abroad a lot, don't you?
Yes, what is restriction? For my sins, I've been elected the representative of this lot and this lot on our national GRBS committee. Well, that means Red's not sitting back here doing nothing. But it's based here. I'm going over to Wiltshire in a couple of weeks' time to take part in a big agricultural do in Wilts. There's never any end to it if you're prepared. When one door closes, there's always other doors opening. It might get smaller, but they're still there. And the day that I stop sowing seeds, I shall call it a day.
Well, Viola, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your very extensive experiences right the way from the 1930s until today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for listening to it, because I think an awful lot of it is repetition and trope, but still.